Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you guys, happy Thursday. As a reminder, we've got the huddle coming up at noon. Seahawks guests and Dave Wyman joining us. We also have Kraken Insider Andy Ide coming up at 10:30. Really quick, though, today is Veterans Day, so we do want to take a moment at the very top of our show to thank those who have served and those who are serving. Without your sacrifice, your service, and your dedication, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And for that, we're so grateful. So thank you from our show, Jake and Stacy, Jake, Curtis, and myself, and from all of us here at 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better, Stacy. And quite frankly, you know, we talk about, you know, these athletes and the celebrity aspect of it and all that. But the real heroes, the real people that we should be looking up to is those military men and women who serve our country and who put everything on the line for us. And just want to express that gratitude and thank all of you out there who listen to our show and who, you know, constantly put their lives on the line for us every single day. So thank you so much for your service.
All right. Now we are going to, again, be getting to some Kraken stuff coming up at 10:30. Also, Jerry DePoto was on MLB Network. Some interesting stuff there from him. I think I'm going to say Jake was taking issue with some of it. Jake had some major questions about some of it. But again, we'll get to that at 11. Lots of good stuff. Very quickly, Curtis, I think we have an update, and
oh boy,
not just any update.
Uh oh,
Curtis, hit it.
Uh oh. Well, let's see here.
Sorry, I'm already crushing. It's time for an Odell update. That's right. When you hear that jingle, it's time for an Odell update, followed by our breaking news. It means there is an update in the OBJ watch, Odell Beckham Jr. watch. This one breaking this morning, an hour ago, from Diana Russini of ESPN. There are teams, she says, who are talking to Odell Beckham Jr. that believe the free agent wide receiver will wait until the games are complete on Sunday before making his final decision. So it looks like OBJ watch will continue for at least a few days here, Jake. And thank goodness, because I worked really hard on that jingle.
Hey, that's all anybody cared about. Everybody's sitting there thinking, how is this going to impact our team? And Stacy's sitting there thinking, yes, the jingle lives on.
Everything always comes down to me. It always, how does this affect me in this moment? That's how I decide my entire life.
But I do find it very, very fascinating that that is how it's going to come down. And the reason why it makes me so curious is, why are you waiting? Who are you waiting on? What do you need to see over the weekend to determine that decision? The offers are pretty much at a standstill. There's not going to be a whole lot of negotiating over Odell Beckham Jr. People have put in their final offers. They're cap constrained. Which means that they don't have a whole lot of wiggle room to continue to negotiate and continue to drive their price higher. So for most of these organizations, outside of pretty much the Seattle Seahawks, they have given their final offer. And even for the Seahawks at this point, maybe they have given their final offer and are not willing to go any higher than what they've already put out there. So to me, as I'm watching the weekend, maybe Odell Beckham Jr. is curious to watch the Seattle Seahawks over the weekend to see if they are legitimate playoff contenders. If they beat the Green Bay Packers, Stacy, maybe that makes Odell Beckham Jr. think twice about his original decision of maybe wanting to go to Green Bay.
Well, let's talk about that upcoming game against Green Bay. Seahawks traveling to Lambeau, where they haven't won against the Packers since 1999. But this has really been a series between these two teams where the home games have won. Seattle holds the better record at what was then CenturyLink, now Lumen Field. The Packers hold the better record at Lambeau. So Seattle hoping to turn the tide there. Russell Wilson would get, in this case, his first win at Lambeau Field. Here's what I'm thinking, though. Jake, I think we're going to find out who the 2021 Seahawks are on Sunday. I don't really think we know exactly who this year's Seahawks are. You haven't had Russell Wilson for several weeks. Your top draft pick, who was supposed to be this big weapon for your new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, has been out since week one. He played a couple snaps week one. He hasn't been able to come back, return to practice this week, so we'll see if he's out there. Chris Carson has been gone for several weeks. There is a chance. I mean, I think most of us are betting you'll see Russell Wilson this weekend. There's a chance you could see Chris Carson and Dee Eskridge out there as well. So let's start offensively. How does this change your outlook? Will Russell Wilson hit the ground running? I mean, what are kind of the questions we're looking at here?
Well, there's a lot on the table, and really we need to find out who these guys really are, because over the last couple weeks, without Russell Wilson, what you have seen is that the offenses continue to struggle with their offensive identity, to know exactly who they are and ultimately what they want to be. But on the defensive side of the ball, they have really started to turn things around. Statistically, I want to give a hat tip here to a Hawk blogger here, laying out since week four, opponents points per game, they're fourth in the NFL. Yards per play, they're 11th. Third down percentage, they're first. Opponent passer rating, they're ninth. Opponent yards per rush, they're fifth. So you look at a lot of these statistics, and the Seahawks have started to turn things around in a positive way. But also at the same time, let's not act like they have not faced some of the worst offenses in the league outside of the Los Angeles Rams. And in the second half of that Rams game, it turned into a bloodbath. So we need to see what this defense looks like against good top-tier offensive play, and you're going to get that against the Green Bay Packers if Aaron Rodgers is out there, and against one of the better teams in the NFL, in the NFC, Stacey. So we are going to see how the Seahawks team stacks up. And ultimately, the question that I'll ask you in terms of how you see this going is, do the Seahawks live up to that preseason hype of what we all thought they could be, or do they get brought back down to reality of kind of the struggles that they've been going through this entire season?
It's a good question. I think that this, I think this team can be a lot better than what we've seen this year. I do think there were some deficiencies that all of us collectively, whether you were covering the team or a fan, I don't want to say we're overlooking, but we're assuming wouldn't be as big of an issue as it has been. For instance, they added Gabe Jackson. Damian Lewis had a fantastic rookie season, even if it tailed off at the end of the year. So Dwayne Brown returned after what looked like a holdout, what was a holdout. So you felt better about the offensive line than I think we should have, because in reality, you've had some serious questions with center play. And coincidentally, we knew heading into the draft that that was an area they should address. And with the subsequent move of getting Gabe Jackson, I think we kind of overlooked it, glossed over it. Nope, still reared its head. It's still an issue. You continued to advocate for adding a center. But what I'm saying is, I think that that was always going to be an issue, and was always probably going to keep the Seahawks from being as good as they could possibly be. But I also think that keeping the Seahawks from being as good as they possibly could be has been not having Russell Wilson out there, not having Chris Carson out there, and that has a chance to change this weekend. So I do think there's a very real chance, especially if you get Carson back out there in addition to Wilson, that you see this team look significantly better than it has, even against a pretty good Packers defense that has weaknesses. I want to stress that has weaknesses.
It does have weaknesses, but this is a good Green Bay Packers defense. I mean, they are very, very solid. You know, watch them on film, respect the heck out of them in what they've been able to do. And this is the hope, right? The hope is that when you get Russell Wilson back, you get your offense and your entire team for the first time really pretty much healthy across the board, that you see that this group can live up to expectations, that they can compete, that they can play up to their potential, and that they can figure out exactly how to get the best out of their best players. I mean, novel concept, right? How can they get the best out of Russell Wilson and maximize his strengths?
Right.
How can they effectively get Chris Carson going on the ground if he's able to play in this game? How do you, throughout the entire game, mesh in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and what they're able to do. And so to me, when I look at this Green Bay Packers team, I absolutely see an opportunity here for Russell Wilson to step in first game back and to really put the league on notice in terms of what this team and what this offense is capable of doing, and for the defense to finally get a performance, Stacy, that they can plant their flag on, that they can say, look, this isn't against some of the worst offenses in the league like it happened in the second half of last year. We are legitimately turning things around, and we're here to stay, and we're here to make some serious noise in the second half of the season.
Let's focus defensively then. So let's start with here. Do you think the bye week helped the Seahawks figure out a way to better utilize Jamal Adams? Because one of the biggest critiques heading into the bye week, and I know that we've kind of talked about this a bit, but I really want to hone in on it, was, hey, they aren't using Jamal Adams not only as often as they should, but as creatively as they should. And that latter one seems to be heavily related to the lack of sacks, the lack of quarterback hits he has this year. Do you think that there was some serious reflection on that?
I sure hope so. I mean, it sounded like it. I can tell you when Pete Carroll was talking about the third down inefficiencies offensively, it really, and I know this, I know that this is what they do, this is how they treat the bye week as a coaching staff, but you could hear Pete Carroll be very reflective on, hey, here's what we did in the first half. We know that there's ways to improve, and we are really going through this week of practice to iron out some of those issues. I have to imagine and fully believe that that is something that they were looking into during the bye week, because that is, to me, the last piece of the puzzle for your defense. Your passing defense is starting to play better. It is your pass rush. It is Jamal Adams and his effectiveness. And this guy absolutely is a game-breaking talent. Game-changing talent, and you have not utilized him to the best of your ability. And how can you do that moving forward? And to me, it's a lot easier said than done, but Stacy, they have to utilize him more in pass-rushing situations and get him going.
Yeah, they do. And I go back to, can we get really specific with that? Can we get X's and O's for the last, 2 minutes here? There's so much more we wanted to talk about, and we're going to have time today because, again, as a reminder for you guys, we've got the huddle at noon, so it's going to be an entire 2 hours preview of this upcoming matchup between Seattle and Green Bay. It'll be awesome. We're going to have Seahawks guests. But I want to focus just on that Jamal Adams part. Can you talk about how you'd rather see him used?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you talk about Jamal Adams, I want to see them, when they decide to bring him with pressure, I want to see them try to confuse Aaron Rodgers at the line of scrimmage. That's an extremely hard thing to do, and Aaron is so good if he's out there on the field in terms of getting the ball out of his hands and getting it out to his receivers out on the perimeter. But if you're going to bring him at all, if you're going to bring him at all, and you need to, by the way, because this pass rush is not good enough to just rush four and drop seven. You're not good enough to be able to do that. You have to bring him at different times, and you cannot do these obvious fire zone pressures where Aaron Rodgers knows a million miles away that Benson Mayoa is going to be in coverage. You have to get Jamal Adams out there in unique situations, in situations where it's hard to diagnose exactly where he's going to end up in his pass rush.
Can you explain a fire zone pressure?
Yes, a fire zone pressure is really, it's a fancy way of being able to say, we are going to bring a linebacker or somebody from the secondary, and we are going to continue to rush four or five, yet we're going to drop a defensive lineman into pass coverage. Basically, it's addition by subtraction, right? So I am adding Jamal Adams to my pass rush, and so I end up rushing four because I'm taking a defensive lineman out and having him drop into coverage instead of Jamal Adams. So it's just replacing those two players and doing it, trying to do it in a way. I say trying because they haven't been very successful within the first half of the season. Trying to do it in a way where it's not easy to know what's going on. It's hard for the offensive line to pick up, and it's hard for the quarterback to understand where the pressure's coming from. So that is when fire zone blitzes are done at its best, but the Seahawks have been way too obvious in the way that they've done it, and so it's been very easy for offensive linemen, for the quarterback, to slide protection Jamal Adams' way and to make sure that they're blocked up and protected and then be able to attack that poor defensive end or defensive lineman that's dropping into coverage.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, in his press conference yesterday, Pete Carroll said he'd like for Chris Carson to make it through a full week of practice before deciding on his status for Sunday. What is the real headline?
Well, I'd like to see someone's credit report before dating them, but sometimes you just got to roll the dice. It felt like a good joke.
Brian doesn't have good credit.
Oh, I forgot I'm dating Brian.
He's an astronaut surgeon.
I just remembered I have a boyfriend who's real. So that joke is just kind of like for all my single ladies, not me though.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you don't deserve Brian.
No, I absolutely, Brian and I deserve each other. He's great. He's fantastic. Once again, you guys haven't met him because he works all the time.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's true. It's very true. This to me with Chris Carson is one of those situations where you just hope if you're a coach, if you're Pete Carroll, you're going through every practice and you're just like, please, I've got my fingers and my toes crossed every time he touches the football. Please stay healthy. Please stay healthy, because this is something that even Chris Carson has zero control over. Absolutely zero. And it is a finicky type of injury, but very serious. And when it comes to his neck, and so it's a challenge. And that's why I think, you know, when it comes to Dee Eskridge, when it comes to Chris Carson, you hear Pete Carroll kind of change his tone from his usual, hey, quick healer, hey, he's going to be back, hey, the power of belief. You don't hear those types of things with those two guys. Why? Because he's been burned in the past with those, and it's completely outside the norm of recovery, knowing exactly when the timeline should be and being able to make that timeline happen.
I also think, you know, this isn't about Carson, but to Dee Eskridge, I think Pete Carroll's tone has legitimately changed, in my opinion, because the outlook on him has changed. I think they were more optimistic early that he could come back and maybe were surprised to see some of his symptoms linger, which is why he went to see a couple weeks ago that vision specialist in Florida and then just got back to Seattle. So right now, we had Brady Henderson of ESPN on yesterday. It sounds like what they're waiting to see is, can he complete a practice and get work in without having any side effects after?
Right.
And the last thing, and this isn't anything to joke about, that you want is to have a traumatic brain injury, which is what a concussion is, and then suffer another one in your return.
Correct.
There are some huge risks with that.
Massive risks, and you want to stay as far away from that as humanly possible. And the other thing is that you're right. I mean, Dee Eskridge had yet to get through a practice without the symptoms coming back up. And so on a positive note, he did practice Monday. Nothing came about. He practiced yesterday. Positive signs again about Dee Eskridge and not having any issues there. So all signs are pointing to Dee Eskridge and hopefully Chris Carson joining Russell Wilson in a return back to Green Bay.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Odell Beckham reportedly could hold off on picking a team until after Sunday's slate of games. What's the real headline?
Real headline, the Seahawks aren't getting Odell if they lose ugly. This is what Odell Beckham Jr. is holding out to see what these teams look like this weekend. And if the Seahawks at 3-5 look like a hot mess, even against a really good Green Bay Packers team, and they go out there and fall to 3-6, Odell is not coming here. No matter how many pleas Russell Wilson makes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you're looking at all these offers, let's just lay this out very simply. If I have an offer from the Green Bay Packers and they are sitting there and they're saying with their arms crossed, basically at the negotiating table, like they're the big boss here, that we're going to offer you veteran minimum because we are a Super Bowl contender. We are a team that you want to join. You want to play with Aaron Rodgers. You want to play alongside Davante Adams. We don't need to negotiate. Whereas you're the Seattle Seahawks on the other end, and you've got the highest offer probably on the table or close to it. And you've got a star quarterback. You've got a star head coach. There's all the reasons why you would want to go to Seattle. Yet the record is in the way when it comes to playing meaningful football in the second half of the season and possibly into the playoffs. So I believe that this week's game is vital in terms of luring OBJ and making him feel comfortable to join the team and be a part of something that is meaningful in the second half of the season.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. a real stunner in the NFL this morning. The Panthers and Cam Newton agreed to terms and will reunite for the remainder of the 2021 season. What's the real headline?
Happening now in North Carolina, something no one ever regrets, getting back with your ex. Always a good outcome from that. You know what? There are mostly bad outcomes from that, including in business and with teams. But I actually really like this reunion. Am I wrong? I'm very interested to see how this will go, not only because the Panthers don't really have many great options. It's not like, you know, their season was heading towards a Super Bowl and now this is ruining it. It just becomes a really cool story for everyone else to watch, not necessarily because it's a sinking ship, but because it's just kind of a cool reunion we don't often see. I'm going to tack on some details of that deal from Ian Rappaport. That deal to Cam Newton from the Panthers, a one-year deal worth up to $10 million for the rest of the year, 4.5 fully guaranteed, 1.5 in roster bonuses.
Yeah, this is extremely unique to see a star franchise quarterback be booted out, kicked out the door, and then return at the end of their career. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that they are able to get back to this point. And quite frankly, the Carolina Panthers are desperate. Cam Newton is available, and he probably is the healthiest he has been in the past couple years, having not played games. And so when you worry about that shoulder of his, look, he usually has deteriorated traditionally about the midway point of the season. You got him past that. He's healthy. There's a good chance you get some good productive football out of Cam Newton, you know, with Matt Rhule, with Joe Brady, and the slate of guys that they have there in Carolina. So if nothing else, the fun factor is certainly going to be there in Carolina in the second half of the season. And I just love to see this reunion happen here.
Yeah, the chances of the Panthers making the postseason are, all caps, bold, italicized, slim. They're last place in the NFC South right now. But, like, I don't feel super confident about the Falcons. They're 4-4, so the only thing they've got on them is one less loss. The Saints, I mean, they don't have Jameis Winston. We'll see what happens with them. They're 5-3 right now. They've got a great defense. They aren't getting Thomas back. This could go any number of ways for them. And then Tampa Bay not going anywhere, so Tampa Bay is going to win the division. I think all of us are comfortable with that right now. But after Tampa Bay, even though there are two other teams ahead of the Panthers, I'm not feeling solid about either of those two.
I would fully agree with you on that assessment. I mean, doesn't it feel like the Saints are just ready to bottom out at any point? Like, they are being held together by glue and duct tape with that defense and Sean Payton and that running game. Outside of that, I can't believe that they're in the position they're in right now.
The Saints were one of the most volatile teams heading into the season, where I was like, either their floor is really low or their ceiling can be high. I didn't think their ceiling could be Super Bowl high, but it was like, this could go one of a number of ways. Like, I didn't see a low floor for the Buccaneers. You're bringing back all 22 Super Bowl starters. For the Saints, you don't have Drew Brees, who wasn't really himself in the last, you know, season there or whatever. But you've got Sean Payton. You've got great weapons. You've got Alvin Kamara. You've got a really solid defense. We thought at the time Michael Thomas was coming back. So you were like, you've got weapons. You just don't have the central piece. What are you going to look like?
Right.
And it's a bummer Winston's done for the season, because they were at least playing pretty
playing,
well.
Yeah, they were playing good football. They were 5-5 and 5-2 before, you know, Jameis goes down against the Falcons. So pretty incredible job by Sean Payton there.
All right.
With New Orleans.
As a reminder, Jerry DePoto was on MLB Network. We'll tell you everything he had to say coming up at 11. First, though, the Seattle Kraken are a month into their inaugural season. So what's working and what isn't? That's Andy Ide's latest column on 710sports.com. He joins us next to answer that question.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's talk some Seattle Kraken here. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is 710 Kraken Insider Andy Ide. Andy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
We're great. I mean, plenty to talk about this week. Obviously, Seahawks heading into the weekend, and the Kraken coming off a tough loss against Vegas, but looked pretty solid at times, which is fitting, given our first question here. You have a column up on 710sports.com for anyone listening that's right on the homepage. You talk about what's working and what isn't for the Kraken in the first month into the season. So let's start with the positives. What's been working for this team?
Well, they've become a really good puck possession team, and their stretches, like we saw in that Vegas game, the second period, where they actually dominate the game and they don't allow the opposition anything. They have the puck, they tilt the ice and get all the chances. That's a good sign moving forward. You don't want to be a team that's always chasing the game and chasing the puck. So they have it a lot. It's on their sticks a lot. Not only does that give you more offensive chances, but it keeps the other team away from your goal, to your goalie. And you know, it becomes a good defense. Sometimes that good offense is a great defense. So that's been the kind of the consistent thing from them, is just how they control the puck.
Okay, Andy, now we got to get to the bad part. What has not been working for these guys?
Well, a couple things. They mismanaged the puck at times. They turn it over in bad spots, you know. Turning it over deep in the other team's end is one thing, but when you turn it over in your own end or in the neutral zone, those come right back at your goalie. We saw that in the Arizona game. They just a lot of terrible turnovers. That pops up every now and then and gives them trouble within games. And then the goaltending has been a little iffy so far. You know, Philip Grubauer has most of the starts, and while he's not playing terribly, he's not up to what we expect from Philip Grubauer. And I still think there's time where he'll round into his shape that we're used to seeing him being. I don't believe he's a goalie who's going to have a below 900 save percentage like he does now come the end of the season. So, and he's just not getting like the big saves. Like sometimes you need your goalie to make a save after you've made a mistake. And it feels like every time the team makes a mistake, they give up a goal. The goalie's not helping them out. So those are the two things that I think aren't working right now.
Andy, I got to be blunt, man. Why do these guys stink so much? It feels like at the end of periods, it just feels like that's when the goals come.
End of periods and maybe the shift after a goal they've had some trouble with, right? Like, you know, we score a goal and that would kind of relax, and the other team gets out there, they're fired up, they go right down and score, and then you lose all the momentum. You know, I think it's a concentration thing. You know, I think they let up a little bit, and it's something they talked about a lot, you know, yesterday at practice about how they have to finish teams, and they have blown some leads in the third periods of games, and it's just a mentality of finishing, you know, getting that extra goal, not letting up, continue what you're doing. And you know, that Vegas, the Vegas game ends up both the first and second period, they gave up tying goals, were just deflators. And, you know, Vegas took advantage in the third period and scored twice in the first minute and a half. They just rode that momentum. So hockey's a game of momentum swings. And, you know, and if you get the big ones and goals at end of period, they're definitely momentum builders. You're going to go a long way to win. And Seattle's been on the wrong side of those things so far.
They obviously have some younger players. It was kind of their angle in the expansion draft, right? Go defensive, go physical, a bit younger, a slightly different approach than Vegas took. When you're looking at turnovers, for instance, being a huge problem, is that a factor there, or is there just a general mishandling of the puck that they've been doing?
It's been some of the young guys. And, you know, a guy like Hayden Fleury, a defenseman, has struggled there. He had a pretty bad turnover against Arizona, and then he hasn't played the last two games. So that's part of it. But there's some veteran players who are also making those mistakes, you know, and going back to that Arizona game, what turned out to be the game winner was a turnover from Adam Larson and behind the net, which is, he's a veteran defenseman, has been around a long time. So it seems to be popping up, and I think it's just a concentration thing. And, you know, and some of that can be, you know, still that they're still trying to figure each other out. I know it's been a month from the season, but you know, if you're not expecting a pass from somebody, or you're expecting your guy to be there and you make a pass and there's no one there and it gets turned over. So little things like that all kind of contribute to that.
You know, Andy, one of the things that we were talking about yesterday was the fact that Jordan Eberle has finally come to life. I mean, he really struggled at the beginning. Now he's been red hot in terms of his scoring. What have you seen from him? What's been the difference, and why has he all of a sudden been able to click for him?
Well, a lot of time in hockey, guys who are goal scorers, and Eberle has certainly been that throughout his career, both in Edmonton and New York where he played. A lot of times those goal scorers are streaky. So he went six games without anything, and then now he's got seven goals in seven games. And some of it's a combination of things. It's confidence, you know. He might have been maybe overthinking a little bit early when he wasn't getting the goals. But he kept saying, as long as I'm getting chances, you know, the goals are going to come. And it turns out he was right, because since he said that, he scored seven times. So all along he was getting chances, you know, and they just, either a goalie was making a great save or he was just missing the net barely, things like that. So I think he just kept plugging away, and now they're going in, whereas opposed to where they weren't. You know, sometimes hockey's funny sometimes because, you know, a difference between a goal and not a goal sometimes is bad luck. And so I think he was getting some bad luck early, but he just stuck with it.
What were your expectations for this team before the season started, and have those expectations changed?
Yeah, you know, when I looked at the team beforehand, I wasn't falling trapped to the, they got to be just like Vegas, because I thought what Vegas did was unrealistic. Mm-hmm. one in a million, you know, perfect storm kind of thing. I my expectations were that if they could stay competitive, and I think they have been competitive within games, and by the end of the season in March or in the spring that they're playing meaningful hockey games, whether they get into the playoffs or not, as long as they're in that race, I think that to me is a successful season.
Now, Andy, that part of it obviously we'll keep a very close eye on, but you did mention this last part of the schedule being somewhat of an easier section of it, and you were 100% right, yet the Kraken have not been able to capitalize. What are we looking at here in the next few games for the Kraken and on their schedule?
Well, they got a six-game homestand they're starting tonight, and they've been playing better at home, but there are some pretty good teams coming in. You know, Anaheim tonight is the team that I think most people predicted would not be in the playoffs, but they're off to a good start, so they're playing well. And then they get Minnesota again on Saturday. It's a good Minnesota team who they've already beaten here. They played them last homestand and beat them here. But then things get really interesting because you have teams like the Colorado Avalanche coming in who are Stanley Cup favorites. The Washington Capitals with Alex Ovechkin are going to be here. And then the Carolina Hurricanes, who are off to a blistering start, all come in to finish out this homestand. So it gets tougher as this homestand goes. So they're going to need to find their game and fine-tune their little mistakes by the second half of this homestand because it's not going to be easy.
Kind of a tough question here, and it's a bit too early, Andy, to have a real answer. But obviously there's a little bit of I want to say like doubt, surprise, maybe a little bit of criticism when the team hired Dave Hakstol, who was a great collegiate level coach and then obviously struggled with the Flyers. Have any of the struggles for Seattle been some same issues popping up that he's had in Philadelphia, or are they entirely unrelated and probably just a matter of chemistry?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, you're right. It is early. I mean, there's still like 70 some games left in the season. I don't think so. I think it's mostly chemistry and just, you know, the guys getting used to the routine and getting used to the system and being able to make predictable plays. And by that, I mean that your teammate understands what you're going to do. Like, so they can predict it. I think the players like him. You know, I know he's definitely a systems guy, and they have you see the good parts of it, right? You see the parts of the game where they dominate. And I was really impressed yesterday in practice after two tough games. You know, he was very straightforward, but so were the players we talked to. They didn't pull any punches. They didn't, you know, spin it in any way. You know, they just said, you know, the bottom line is it doesn't matter if we're playing well during the game. We're not winning the games. And I kind of felt like that was a reflection of the coach, and that's a positive that they're not, you know, hiding from it, that they're all taking ownership on what's been happening.
Yeah, I was curious about that because you'd seen some criticism from Philadelphia, but we talked with Morgan Geege yesterday, who just loves him. And so it was I was curious to get your perspective on that. But he is Kraken Insider. Yeah. He is 710 Kraken Insider, Andy Eide. Andy, always great to talk to you. Let's hope that we've got a win or two to talk about next week.
That'd be nice, yeah.
All right. Have a good weekend,
Andy.
Man.
All right, talk to you guys later.
See ya. All right, always love talking to Andy. That is 710 Kraken Insider, Andy Eide. You can read his latest up on the homepage, 710sports.com. Coming up next, the latest on Odell Beckham Jr., every team looking at him. Plus, there's one common theme in the teams that want him. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Guys, don't forget, you can listen on the go or catch up with Jake and Stacey if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Thanks in advance from both of us. Jerry DePoto was on with MLB Network the other day. We've got some sound coming up at the top of the hour to play you the latest on Mariners free agency. Right now, though, OBJ update. Don't worry. I'm not playing the jingle. It's not happening until we get breaking news, but we are going to look at some commonalities, a common theme with the teams that do want him. So we know, courtesy Diana Rossini, that at least three teams that are at the top of Odell's list were the Saints, the Chiefs, the Packers. The Seahawks also reportedly in on that still, per Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. Is there a team I'm missing that was? Oh, the Patriots. The Patriots also reportedly vying for Odell Beckham Jr. right now. So there's at least five teams. We know there are more, but five teams. Pats, Seahawks, Chiefs, Saints, Packers that are all in on Odell Beckham Jr. Jake, is there a common theme?
Well, I mean, I think when you talk about a common theme, aren't these all organizations that have pretty good culture, pretty good locker rooms,
yeah,
pretty good head coaches, solid situations right now. Maybe they're dealing with injuries, but overall, in terms of, I thought that what we were hearing was that this guy was, you know, a cancer and should be untouchable. I thought that has been what we have heard this entire conversation about OBJ and whether you should bring him in or not. So, I mean, you look at these coaches, I mean, you should be telling them all the same things. You should be telling Andy Reid and Bill Belichick, and you should be telling the Green Bay Packers, should be telling Matt LaFleur, should be telling Pete Carroll, should be telling all these well-established coaches in this league that Odell Beckham Jr. is not going to help them. He's going to ruin them the moment he steps on into their facility.
I can sense the sarcasm now, Jake. And honestly, I agree.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I completely agree with you. I can have a conversation with someone that's like, hey, getting Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't make you a Super Bowl team. Quite frankly, like, I might agree with you on that one. I think that you'd be better off getting a defensive end, a pass rusher, adding a running back, or getting Carson back healthier. All of these things make sense. None of those things are available right now. So if the question is, do you want to add a wide receiver, an extra target or not? My answer is almost always going to be yes. It doesn't matter if he's not the talent that he was in his earliest seasons with New York. And it doesn't matter if he's had a falling out, if the Giants traded him away or had a falling out in Cleveland. Like, clearly other teams that have great cultures and great teams and great coaches are interested. And it has kind of surprised me to see some of the critique that I've seen be, he'll ruin the locker room.
Yeah.
You're telling me he'll ruin the Seahawks locker room where Pete Carroll has like a pretty firm grasp on culture there? Like, no, man, I'm not buying it. And guess what? You're bringing him in on likely not much more than a veteran minimum deal. Then cut him. Then get rid of him. You're not tied to him. You're not married to him long term.
Right. It's not guaranteed money, right? None of these teams are going to be offering him guaranteed. I'd be very shocked if that was even the case. And so, you know, when you look at this and you look at the commonality, it should, in my opinion, make people feel better about the situation that there are a very good crop of teams with good culture, with good head coaches, with good structure overall that are very interested in Odell Beckham Jr. and want his services for their team. Will it work out perfectly for each and every single one of these teams? No, it's got to be the right fit. It's got to be the right situation. But looking at that common theme is very different than everything else that we've been told in that regard. And so I think that when you have a strong head coach, when you have a strong franchise quarterback, when you have strong culture and you believe in that culture, you are willing to take some of these chances on players like this to bring them into the fold and see if they're able to assimilate into your culture, that you're able to assimilate into the locker room, and that you can focus on football, that you can focus on getting the very best out of them out there on the field. And with a talent like Odell Beckham Jr., I mean, if you're able to get the very best version of him in terms of being buttoned up, being laced up, being somebody that is going to come in and I'm not saying don't be yourself from a personality perspective, but what I'm saying is don't be a distraction. And for eight, nine games, that's what their understanding is as they walk through the door. I mean, I think it's an opportunity that you should be taking. And quite frankly, I've been very surprised to see the pushback. I mean, I love the conversation. I love the arguments. I love all that. That's why we're on sports radio, right? I mean, we live for it, Stacey. But at the same time, I don't view, if this situation happened during the Legion of Boom days, I don't feel like there would be all this hesitation like we're seeing right now with the Seattle Seahawks.
I actually think it's like, well, maybe I'm being biased. I'm going to peel back.
I should say Seahawk fans, not the Seattle Seahawks, Seahawk fans.
I'm going to peel back the curtain and speak very candidly real quick. I have been a little surprised to see so much pessimism tied to people's feelings, lingering feelings and antagonism about Russell Wilson. Like, I don't know if this is professional to say, but like, I've been kind of surprised to see if you say, Jake, hey, I want Odell Beckham Jr. here, how many people are like, oh, because Russell Wilson does? And it's like, well, no, because like, what analyst that we've spoken with, the majority of them, Mina Kimes, all these people we've had on, Groz, were like, yeah, why not? Sure, do it. And it's just like, I feel like there's a kind of antagonism right now towards, I don't want to say towards Russell Wilson, but towards the team in a way where people just I don't know. There's just a lot of frustration and anger there's with like the, every possible
I would say that the belief is not there. The belief is not there with this team, with this franchise overall, that they are the team that can take this player and get the most out of him. And that to me is a troubling sign of deeper seated issues when it comes to this organization, when it comes to the entire outlook in general. But to me, this is an organization, this is a group that if they go in there against Green Bay at Lambeau Field and they go and win, they are able to pull out a win here. I mean, that would be a huge, huge victory for them to set everything up for what the second half of the season could be for the Seattle Seahawks.
The low cost is what makes me fine with it. The low cost and the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. is at a place in his life where he has very little power. After choosing a team, presumably on this low deal, you've got little power to figure something out. Because if the Seahawks bring you in and you suddenly decide, Odell Beckham Jr., that you actually are a jerk and you actually are going to throw a fit and you actually are disappointed with the lack of targets, okay, cool. They've got Eskridge coming back and then they've got Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Keep complaining. Then you aren't going to hit the field. Like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? If I'm Pete Carroll, I'm like, okay, see ya. And like, I didn't end up spending that much money out of some deeper pockets than other teams in the league have right now. So I guess if it were a higher cost and a higher price point, I would take more issue with it. I am curious to see what a team signs him for, because up to a certain number, I've got like almost no risks that I'm looking at.
Well, and that's why yesterday when it came to this conversation and Diana Russini first came out that list and made a few phone calls, the information that I got back was, no, this is a very low risk situation financially, and the Seahawks can easily be the highest offer and still not have to pay very much and be anywhere in that range of $2 to $4 million maximum. And the $4 million to me is the high end, very, very high end, but they could get him for even less than that. To me, I just the as you're talking about risk reward, I don't really see the risk here.
All right, coming up next, I've been mentioning Jerry Dipoto's interview with MLB Network. He talked about what they want to add and where they want to add. And it's a fascinating interview, so we'll go over that. We've got four down territory and a very important story, in my opinion, coming up after the timeline. It's all coming your way next.